Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are, what time of the day you're listening to this episode of Talking the Blues. George and Andy, how are you both?
Well, I was just thinking, as you said that, we should own up. Where in the world am I? I'm in France. Where are you, Paul?
I'm not disclosing that.
Oh.
A man of many destinations.
it doesn't suit my it doesn't suit my purposes for that to be known at this moment in time.
Fair enough.
Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, man of intrigue. Ooh, Scarlet Pimpernel.
Something along those lines. Yeah. right. Where are we? Well, the
fourth. No, sixth.
The away trip to Bournemouth is, I think, now isn't that now the longest away trip of the season for Everton supporters?
So, I guess so.
Talking about where in the world we are, we were at Bournemouth at the weekend.
Mm. They were brilliant. The supporters were brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. 1,200, I think it was, or was it 1,500, which is the maximum that's permitted at Bournemouth's tiny little ground. But they made themselves heard in more than one way, not just on the pitch, but in the boardroom and indeed in the shareholders' home.
I think in fairness, Paul, the travelling fans at Bournemouth made one statement in support of not selling Harrison Armstrong. But I think the wider fan base on social media played just as big a part as well, because the furore, the fume, the anger that spewed out onto social media when it came to light that Everton were considering a bid from Nottingham Forest for Harrison Armstrong, I've never seen anything like it. Honestly, it eclipsed the anger and fume of the sale of Rooney for me. I've never seen anything like it. It was almost joyous to behold, because for me it was almost possibly the first time that the Everton fan base were as one. You're always going to get people who have a different opinion on things and on people and on issues, but the unanimity of Blues on Saturday, in the wake of that article, was something to behold. It really was. I mean, I was fuming. It put me in a bad mood for the whole day. But it actually made me feel better that I didn't see one comment remotely in support of that action or that potential action. And I thought, you know, people have said many times, you know, that the Everton fan base is not one that you piss off. Well, that was proven big time on Saturday, because the way that everybody came together and the way it was voiced by those people that made that trek all the way down to Bournemouth was just, it was something very, very special to behold. It really was. And I would love to have been a fly on the wall of the Friedkin's office when all this was bouncing off their computer screens and TV screens and what have you. They must have thought, what on earth have we done?
Well, it's pretty obvious, isn't it? Well, their reaction is clear.
Yeah.
They're back down. Good. Can we take this any further? Is this the beginning of something extraordinary in football about fan action?
I guess in the bigger picture, then anything's possible, bro. Right now, I just want to concentrate on getting things right for Everton. And the first thing we've done is shown this ownership that they cannot take liberties, you know, with something that means so much to so many people and that clearly doesn't mean jack shit to them. I'm sorry to use vernacular, but, you know, if we'd recorded this on Saturday night, then the bleep machine would have been dead already.
I don't know what to say. Should we talk about the match?
Yeah, let's talk about the match, because I thought, personally, having watched the match, you could say that in the end, 1-1 was probably about right, but on the chances created, I thought we had the better of the game, actually. I felt a little bit sorry for Barry, because he got himself in three or four really good positions, and but for their goalie having a worldie in the first half, we could have been home and dry. Thought we played some decent stuff first half. Thought we lost our way after the goal, obviously, because we'd had a decent start and then we eased off. I don't know. It's something Everton have done for donkey's years. Like, we'll start well, play well for 15 minutes, you know, get a really good toehold in the game, and then for some reason we ease up and let the opposition back in. And I think that's what we did on Saturday. And obviously, you know, then, you know, Bournemouth got the lead, and then we're playing catch up again, which is, you know, which was disappointing. And I understood Moisey at the end saying that he wasn't particularly happy with the second half performance. But overall, I think we definitely deserve the point. I just think on the way we played and the chances we created, and that is a really pleasing thing. We are creating chances. You know, now we've just got to start taking them a bit more regularly. But overall, I thought it was a reasonable performance. That, you know, with a bit of better finishing, we'd have been coming home with 3 points, and everyone would have been a lot happier.
Did you see the match, Paul?
Sadly, I didn't, which is, you know, highly irresponsible of somebody who's not supposed to be doing a podcast talking about Everton. I wanted to, but yeah, just my schedule and timetable just didn't allow me to do it. So there's not much I can add, to be honest.
Don't think there's a lot more to say. I mean, Andy's kind of covered it. I you know, it was clear that Bournemouth are the team that are in Europe. They played better football than we did over the whole game. But if we'd had a centre forward, we'd have been out of sight.
I'm going to say I think that's just a tad harsh on Barry. You've got to give their goalie credit, bro.
Yeah, chances, Andy.
I know he had four chances.
He didn't put one away. As long as that goes on, we're going to keep having this conversation.
Yes, I know. I'm just trying to cut the lad a little bit of slack in the fact that, you know, it wasn't for the lack of trying. Their goalie, particularly first half, made two really, really good stops from Barry. But I take the point. You know, had that been a Lineker or Lukaku, we probably would have been 3-0 up at half time, or 3-1 up at half time, allowing for the fact that they scored.
Oh, is anybody going to arrive before Tuesday night? Is the answer to, because for me, looking at that match on Saturday, I'm pleased that they're beginning to play the ball to feet to Barry, because he's much more capable with his feet than he is in the air, even though he's quite good in the air. But, you know, we lumped, I stopped counting at eight. There were eight massive long balls and we lost seven of them. I don't understand the logic of that at all. You know, and if you want a reason for why the press dropped after 20 minutes, that might well be it. That the team goes, we're forever fagging this ball. We're forever chasing the damn thing. Why don't we keep it? We've got five or six players in that team. I mean, I presume Ndiaye won't be in it much longer, but five or six players that you can play the ball to under pressure and they will hold it. That's not bad. We need more, but that's not bad. So I don't understand why we're giving the ball away. And having, when everything's done by numbers. You get to the hour, you've got to make substitutions, get to 10 minutes from the end, you've got to bring Alcaraz on. It's getting a bit dull. But here's my thought on this. When Beto came on and made his howler, I thought to myself, this is just ridiculous. If we're going to change Barry, and I could see why after an hour you might go, right, I've got to try something else. For God's sake, bring Keane on. I don't care if he's 35. I don't care if it proves that the squad is threadbare. It is. The manager keeps saying so publicly, hoping that someone will give him enough tools to stop saying it because he can't say it anymore, but he can. I would bring Keane on. Keane is a better shooter than Beto, B, a better header than Beto, C, stronger, D, not going to get roughed up by centre halves because he is one. He knows how to do all that stuff. I don't understand why we're bringing a haymaker on when, and plus, if you bring Keane on, that means that the next free kick and corner, you've got Branthwaite, Tarkowski, Keane. Ugh. Just
Yeah.
a grain of imagination is, I would prefer, to be shown.
Well, Beto's on his way, isn't he? He's going to Fiorentina.
Is that definite?
As far as I understand, it's going to happen today.
Right. Okay.
Good luck to the boy.
Because we're bringing in the American, aren't we? What's his name? Florin Balogun from AS Monaco.
Well, I saw that in an article that he wrote this morning. I've not seen that anywhere else, to be honest.
Yeah. Well. The Italian guy Fabrizio Romano
Fabrizio, yeah.
has reported it.
All right. He's normally pretty
He's
accurate,
reporting
that
what?
guy.
Sorry, I've missed all this. What's he reported?
So we're bringing in Balogun from AS Monaco.
What position does he play?
Centre forward.
Oh wow. Brilliant.
There's a likelihood of Richarlison coming back.
So it appears, yeah.
Right. So
With Ndiaye going in the opposite direction.
yeah. Well,
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be a lot of people who are upset about that, but I think we have to act, not as a fan base, when I say we, I don't mean us, I mean everybody. We have to acknowledge that Ndiaye for he's rejected three further contract extensions, hasn't he? So that's an indication that he wants to move on. He sees his future elsewhere. From all accounts, Richarlison has asked to leave Spurs at least three times. So he's clearly unhappy there. I mean, he's been unable to tie down a first, a regular start in the Spurs starting 11, and yet he was their top scorer last season.
His career has stood still since he left Everton, maybe.
Exactly. And I'm hoping that, if Ndiaye wants to go, then thanks for your service, on you go. And I think the big difference, between the Ndiaye and why people are maybe not getting quite as wound up about Ndiaye as they were about Armstrong is, Armstrong's younger, he's come through the academy, he's clearly one for the future, and he doesn't appear to want to leave Everton Football Club. And Ndiaye was brought in, he's done a job, now he wants to move on, he won't sign a new contract extension. Let him go. Just get as much as we can for him. Richie, we know what Richie can do, and if he can come back, or if he comes back and he comes back with the same mojo that he had when he was here first time, I think we'll end up with the better of this transaction.
Well, it sounds like we'd be playing 4-4-2.
Well, if we're bringing in a centre forward and Richie, and we've got Barry there, yeah. know, does Barry drop to the, you know, is Barry going to be the one on the, I don't know. Let's wait and see. Let's wait and see how the window pans out. But
if the window pans out like that, Barry sits on the bench.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he'd be used in the same way that we've used him with Beto starting.
Yeah.
And you know, that is a significant, if those two transfers happen, and that's an improvement. Significant upgrade. Yeah.
Yeah.
Got some reservations about Richarlison myself. But if it allows Ndiaye to go to Spurs, even though both clubs are saying that the two are unrelated, then it makes sense. And Ndiaye said before the end of last season to the club that he no longer wanted to stay at Everton. Mm-hmm. And it's only because we haven't been able to achieve the transfer value that we wanted for him, that he started this season with us.
The only thing about the Ndiaye and Richarlison deals is the valuations that have been reported on this deal, because whilst 60 million for Ndiaye represents a decent profit for Everton Football Club, in today's market, I think that's an undervaluation. And conversely, the valuation I've seen of 35 million for Richarlison, I think is crazy as a valuation. When you look at Jesus from Arsenal, who's going to Barcelona for 10 million, same age, same, you know, out of contract at the end of this season, more very, very similar circumstances. One's going for 10, one's reported at 35.
I can't believe that 35 is an accurate figure, though.
I sincerely hope it's wrong, because if 60 for Ndiaye and 35 for Richarlison are correct, then somebody within the Everton negotiating team needs to kick up the jacksie.
Absolutely, Andy. I mean, because, those figures reflect that Everton are a pushover.
Yeah, because with the prices that are being paid for other players, you know, Ndiaye really should be, to my mind, should be 75 plus, and Richie may be 10 to 15.
But, well, we'll find out, won't we?
Let's whisper this in case anybody from Tottenham's listening.
Okay.
Ndiaye's output, I mean, he's pleasant on the eye. And, you know, he's a lovely-looking footballer when he's got the ball to his feet. But actually, in terms of actual performance figures, mm-hmm. you know, how many goals does he score? How many goals does he contribute to? The figures on a comparative basis with, you know, other players in the league don't warrant the sort of 70 million plus that Everton wanted for him.
No, I get that. But when you see the valuations of other players who've moved around this summer, it's just, you think to yourself, I don't know. It's a football fan's reaction. You know, is he technically our most, well, is he technically our best player? I guess that's debatable. Is he arguably the most exciting player in the Everton squad currently? That's a different argument. And if any, you know, fans want to be excited at the end of the day, and on excitement, he probably is worth more than the 60 million that's being touted. I don't know. I just think that, personally, like I said, I just think that 60 for Ndiaye and 35 for Richarlison is out of kilter.
Okay, but certainly
in respect to the valuation of Richie, and I've just said, you know, I'm hoping he can come back and rediscover the form he showed in his first time with us. But when you compare it to the valuation that Arsenal and Barcelona agreed for Jesus, then 35 million is a nonsense.
Yeah, but I don't think it's 35 million.
Oh, okay. I'll bow to your superior knowledge.
Because he doesn't justify that fee.
No.
And it's not in his interest neither to go for a high fee, because the higher the fee, the more pressure it puts on his wages. Because
mm-hmm.
Everton will look at it from a total cost point of view. fee plus wages.
Yeah.
And if you know if the fee was that level, then he's not going to get anything like the level of wages that he probably expect if he comes to Everton. There may be other reasons, for, obviously, for him coming. In the sense that, you know, it's probably been the period that he was at Everton has probably been the happiest period of his career. And therefore, and there's always been that association and link between him, the club, and the fans. So, you know, he might be coming just because he actually wants to play football and play football in a place where he's loved, because he seems to be that type of character. But he ain't coming for anything close to 35 million.
Fair enough. Good.
Good.
And if we get 60 million for Ndai, that's. I think that's absolutely top whack. I know that we got a bigger offer from somewhere else, but he didn't want to move. This is a deal that I think suits all parties, to be honest.
Well, like I said, I'm now putting my cold hat on. If he doesn't want to be here,
but that's been known for months.
Yeah. Exactly. He doesn't want to be here. He wants to move. Where he goes is neither here nor there. I mean, if he says he wants Champions League football, he sure as shit isn't going to get that with Spurs. Certainly not this season.
No, I think you misread it. It could be Championship football.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I mean, without being unnecessarily cruel, he wants to go. He doesn't want to be here. You know, if we can get 60 or a bit more for him, then let's do the deal, move on.
That's not cruel. That's professional football.
Yeah,
you know, nothing cruel about it.
Richie wants to come back. Richie wants to come back to somewhere where he feels more comfortable and more appreciated and more loved. And I think you're absolutely right. I think he's a player who feeds on that. Like I said before, I think that, you know, everything being equal, him coming back and being fit and ready to rock and roll, I think we'll end up getting the better of the deal. I really do.
Any sign of a right back?
Well, I don't know. There's still rumours floating around about it. I can't remember the lad's name. Playing in France. Gone. Sorry.
It's only that, you know, in my opinion, I understand why Moyes is defensive about talking about him and enthusiastic about talking about Roll, who's an enthusiastic football player. He's an accident waiting to happen at right back. He's just got no positional sense for the position at all. And I, you know, and I understand why Moyes is going, yeah, well, I like people who go, I'll give it a go, i.e. not Jake O'Brien. And I take that point, but I think it's, you know, a waste of him and a ridiculous idea. And next week, you know, I did watch United yesterday, and Rashford is parked out on the left wing. Well, that could be the end of the Role experiment, because I would imagine Rashford will push it and run past him, and there'll be all sorts of chaos. Because he's not positionally a right back. I still think, and I know Moyes isn't listening to this, that what he should try is to move Tarkowski to right back and bring in Jake O'Brien, so that the passing from the centre of the defence is better. Tarkowski's distribution on Saturday, his goal and his commitment aside, was dreadful. Every time he whacked it upfield, we lost it. And by contrast, Branthwaite is playing 2 feet on the deck, and so does Jake O'Brien mostly. Certainly not when he's right back, but that's the way we play football. So that there is a way out of this, but it's certainly not Merlin Rolle. And, you know, Merlin Rolle, for my money, should be in midfield where he can cause all manner of trouble.
Yeah.
And likes to get forward and likes to shoot too.
I mean,
but well, I thought Sorry, Andy.
No, you're making a good point, bro. I think, the sooner we can get Merlin Rowell back in a midfield role, the better. For me, I think him, well, I said it last week, didn't I, when people thought maybe I went a little bit over the top, but I think him, Hackney, and Armstrong are the future of Everton's midfield. I really do. And I think the fans' reaction to the rumour of, or to the possibility of Armstrong going, supports that everybody, every man and his dog who wears blue and wears blue coloured sunglasses can see that Armstrong is head and shoulders the player that we have to keep and we have to build around for the future. The boy is class, sheer class, and he's only going to get better.
Yeah, that's not in dispute, is it?
The fact that some clown within Everton Football Club was prepared to accept 35 million from him from Nottingham frigging Forest suggests otherwise, bro.
Well, yes, but that person's backed down, Andy. This is all positive. And it's something I wanted to talk to you both about, get you, I was intrigued by the moment where somebody put Moyes on the spot and said, "What's your take on this?" And Moyes said, "The manager is an Evertonian."
Actually, that's a fair comment, bro, because
No, no,
you
no.
know,
But
I,
the
no,
point,
no, 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 no. I'm just saying,
Andy,
I'm no, no. Just
the point is, he is publicly in opposition to his board.
yes, and that's what I was going to say. In recent weeks, I'll hold my hands up. I've been critical of Moyes, and I've thought that a lot of the, shall we say, prevarication in the transfer window has been down to him, and my perception of him being intransigent, which I think he can be at times. He's proven that on many occasions. But when for him to come out as strongly as he did, I was actually quite impressed by that. And it takes a bit for Moise to impress me these days, to be honest, but I'll hold my hands up on that. I was practically delighted that he nailed his colours to the mast on that issue. And it just made me wonder, actually, that had the club gone ahead and sold Armstrong, whether Moyes would have thrown his toys out of the pram and said, "Well, tell you what, find yourself another manager," and whether he would have walked on the principle. I'm not sure that he would, but I think he, the way he answered those questions after the Bournemouth game, I found it somewhat reassuring that he understands, if you like, where the fan base are coming from, and I think he's repaired some bridges that were broken with some fans. He's certainly got the scaffolding up where I'm concerned at the minute. Beat United and all sins will be forgiven. Well, most.
My point is, the manager and the fan base are in direct conflict with the board.
Yeah.
Every time that you or I or Paul or us or anybody talks about the club, I think to myself, what do you mean? What is Everton Football Club? Who is Everton Football Club? And the events of this weekend point to the decisions at Everton Football Club are either taken by Moyes and his committee or they're not back. And then another committee, i.e., seemingly the board or the owners, I don't know who made that decision. Who made that decision about Harrison Armstrong? Because Moyes clearly didn't. So who did? And whoever did it has now been shown to be, according to the real club, which is the fans, the soul of the club, wrong. That was a wrong decision. And they've gone, fair play, we take your point. Now what are they going to do? Because it seems to me what they were selling Harrison Armstrong for was to cancel the Burnley debt. Here we are, 40 million down because we screwed up with PCR. 40 million quid, and there's Armstrong for nothing. And they go, oh, that makes sense.
I think I wrote a very long article, which I published about an hour ago, on this. And I think there's opposing forces within the club. I think Moyes is of the opinion that he will achieve what he wants to achieve, which is mid-table security, and then on the upside, the possibility of getting into the lower levels of European qualification, the Conference League, or the Europa League. And he will do it in a relatively cautious manner by making it difficult to be beaten, particularly away from home. And he will use proven players where possible to do that. Although there's evidence that, I think it's slightly overstated his reluctance to play youth because, we are seeing players coming through. But that's Moyes' approach. And at one level, you might say, well, that's consistent with the Friedkin's approach. But I actually don't think it is. I thought about it long and hard for the last few days. I think the Friedkin's approach is very, very different. Friedkin's approach is, yes, we want the stability that ensures us not to be relegated. That's the first and foremost. We can't afford to be relegated as a football club, or we as the owners can't allow the football club to be relegated. So is David Moyes the right person for that? Yes, because the chances of getting relegated with David Moyes as manager are as minimal as they can be. Where their approach differs, and I think this is where the conflict lies as laid throughout the summer, is how do we build and construct a squad that allows us to achieve their objectives. And I don't think they go along with the Moyes model, which is buying established players who, although might not appear to be that expensive because they're established and more older players tend to be on higher wages than younger players. That's a big no-no for the Friedkins. And the other big no-no about playing older established players is that their resale value is going to be less in the years ahead. The Friedkin model seems to me based on buying younger players, buying value where we can, and building value over the long term that allows them either to trade those players profitably in the future, such as Armstrong, which they obviously massively misjudged the mood of the fans, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But to achieve what they want to achieve, which is a more profitable club, i.e. they don't have to put as much money in each year because they're keeping having to fund the club in order for the club to stay solvent. That was not something that they expected when they bought the club, but that's what they've got to do. So as a result of that, they've changed their transfer strategy to the point where we can buy younger players where there's future value if their careers progress, and Moyes has to do his job with a group of players that Moyes would prefer not to do that with. And that's where the conflict has laid throughout the whole of the summer. Moyes saying, these are the players that I want. The owners saying, well, actually, the owners and the transfer committee saying, actually, that's not the route that we want to go down. We want to go down the route of this type of player, younger players with future value. Moyes saying, no, I want older players to secure my position. And that's the conflict that we've had throughout. And that's why we're now talking on the last day of the window, and there's still quite a bit of business to be done. Now, it looks like that business is going to be done, and it looks like that business is going to be quite successful at the end, by the end of today. And if you've been on Mars or somewhere else for the whole of the summer, and you came back tomorrow morning, it would look like Everton have had a good window. Most Evertonians, because we eat, sleep, and drink Everton Football Club, and we analyse every single day's activities, are going to argue differently to that because we've had to live through every day of the transfer window. But the reality is that tomorrow morning we'll have a younger squad that costs less than the previous squad. and will have more value in the future than the previous squad had. That's good from a shareholder point of view. Mm-hmm. Is it good from a fan's point of view? Well, you've got to then determine whether that new squad with younger, less tested players is going to be competitive. And we'll only know that as the season develops. The second question as fans that we need to ask is, well, why would wealthy owners want to adopt that model? Why wouldn't they want to adopt a model that says, actually, we're prepared to invest large sums of money so that you can buy greater certainty of greater success in the future? I think what we've learned is that the Friedkins aren't those type of owners.
Right.
The Friedkins are owners that bought an undervalued asset because of all of the financial problems that Everton had, the fact that the stadium wasn't completed, the fact that we were hopelessly in debt, the fact that we were virtually insolvent and in administration. So they bought a recovery asset, which is now recovered, has now got a stable base. And I think, and this is only my opinion, I don't know this for a fact, but I think they've got us to a position whereby we probably won't need their financial support beyond the most recent financial support. And we won't get relegated. We'll be mid-table at worst. And there's a slim chance of European football. That being the case, that makes Everton a much more sellable company, much more sellable business than it was 2 years ago. And I suspect that the Friedkins will look to sell the club at some point during this season.
During this season?
Yeah. And if they do, this is just my opinion. If they do, they'll have spent something like 400 million, slightly less than 400 million pounds. 387 million pounds is the exact figure. And they'll sell everything for somewhere between 800 million. And if we got qualification for Europe, perhaps close to a billion, if they find a particularly generous new purchaser of the club. And if they do that, it would be
that'd be a hell of a return. Yeah,
it would have been a very successful investment for them.
Mm. But it does also explain, Paul. Well, sorry to cut across here. Why Moyes is pissed off?
Yes, right. Because the interest, the problem Everton have got is the interest of the owner,
yeah,
as against the interest of the manager, as against the interest of the fans.
Mm. Yep.
Not one of those three parties is aligned with anyone within that group of three.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. I understand.
The fans aren't particularly enamored with David Moyes. Certainly not enamored with the Friedkins after the Friedkins sanctioned the sale of Armstrong, yet reversed it on the back of fan pressure. Just as they did when they were at Roma. They changed their behaviour at Roma when the Roma fans started getting uppity with them. So we know that as a fact that that's what they will do. And they'll do that for one simple reason. They'll do that because they don't want their global reputation and their other global interests to be impacted by what's happening at Everton. So they will back down on the basis of not having negative publicity. And that's something that all Evertonians must remember for the future.
Well, bearing that in mind, and the evidence of the weekend is that you're absolutely right. If you had, you know, we had, if the fans were a solid thing, what would be the next move you might make against these owners? What else could the fans achieve that's important to us, the fans, about that club? Because the you know, what actually happened is I got sent a thing going, let's get rid of the CEO. Is that the next step that the fans can take? Is that a good idea? Who appoints the CEO?
I don't, well, the owners appoint the CEO.
Right.
Through the Everton board. I don't think there's anything that Angus Kinnear has got his critics, particularly after the comments that he made at the end of last season. I don't think there's anything that he could have done this summer differently that would have produced a better outcome. He has the day-to-day challenge of balancing the expectations of the owners, as I just described, and the expectations of somebody who, for all of his good points, is known to be extremely difficult to work with, David Moyes.
Right.
So he's the guy that has to constantly keep both of those two quite disparate and separate entities joined at the hip for the benefit of the football club, whilst at the same time having all of the operational issues that he has to deal with on a day-to-day basis. Now, that's not me feeling sorry for him. That's just me saying, this is how I see it. And that's why he gets paid the big bucks to do it. But I don't believe that removing him is the answer to the question. The answer to the question that we're posing is, could a new set of owners in the future have interests that are more aligned to what we as fans want? And if that is the case, then it probably means not only a new owner, but also a new manager going forwards, which is going to happen anyway, because David Moyes is unlikely to get a contract extension at the end of this season. So the next sort of the next 9 months to the end of next season is going to be a very interesting time for Evertonians. I don't think when we start the beginning of next season, we're going to have, well, we won't have the same manager, and I don't think we'll have the same owners.
Right? Gosh. Well,
bookmark that.
bold prediction of the year.
Well, yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? If you were Moyes listening to this and going, and, you know, I don't believe that we say anything that Moyes is not unaware of, i.e., if we think that the owners are looking for an out clause, you may be absolutely certain the thought must have crossed his mind.
And if that, sorry, George, just 1 second on that. And if, even if they're not looking for an out clause, or if they don't believe that there is a buyer out there that's prepared to pay what they want for the club, they're still going to behave in exactly the same way. They're going to behave in a manner which says, we're putting the minimum amount of money into this football club that we can possibly do to make sure that we stay reasonably competitive in the Premier League. Sorry, I cut across you. Can you continue?
No, I was only going to fantasize on about, if I was David Moyes and I saw the end of my contract coming, I wonder whether I might go, right, well, I might as well just play attacking football. Why not? What's the odds? But it's not in his mindset, is it?
I'm going to come in on this. I mean, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, but if Moyes is out of contract at the end of this season, and we're assuming that he's not going to get another contract offer under this ownership, let's put it like that, it's in a bit of a similar situation to when Allardyce was here, in as much as every man and his dog in football and on the terraces and reading the back pages of the papers every day knew damn well that Allardyce would be gone at the end of that season. That even though he negotiated a season and a half contract, everyone knew, including Sam Allardyce, that he would be gone. But he had a chance to get Everton into Europe in much the same way that Moyes has got a chance, albeit slim at this minute in time, but, you know, you don't know with these signings that are coming in and the signings and the people leaving, the situation with the team might change really positively. I found myself thinking under Allardyce, if Allardyce had really put his foot to the floor and got Everton into Europe last year, he could quite easily have turned around and said, you're going to sack me after I've just got you in Europe after all these years. And Moyes is going to have are potentially the same scenario, where he's out of contract at the end of the season, but he gets us back into Europe, where every man and his dog of an Evertonian wants us to be. We want to be playing in Europe. If he achieves that, he can turn round, or he'd be well within his rights to turn round to the Friedkins or whoever the new owners are and say, this club's not been in Europe since Adam was a lad. I've just got him into Europe. You're going to sack me? You're not going to renew my contract? You're going to let me walk away? You're going to let me go? It's a funny situation. To me, he's not the manager for the long-term future. I really don't. But at the same time, if he now, or Allardyce back when Allardyce was here, had done what everybody wanted, to get us into Europe, wouldn't it make their position a little bit stronger? Wouldn't Moyes have more of a leg to stand on to say, you owe me a contract extension, I've done more than you expected. You expected, you wanted mid-table mediocrity and no threat of relegation. I've done more than that. I've put you into Europe and I've put you into a whole different sphere of financial security.
Well, if I was the owner in that situation, and I've already made my mind up that David Moyes has done the job, my answer to that would be, hear what you say, David, and thank you very much for outperforming our expectations. Here's a bonus on you, off you go. Because actually what we're currently doing, and what I think will become more evident, is that the Friedkins are built, I'm reluctant to sound too enthusiastic about the Friedkins, because there's a misalignment between what the Friedkins want and what the fans want. Mm-hmm. But if the Friedkins were not to sell the business, they would be turning around and saying, we're building a squad that is looking forward to the future, and now we need to bring in a different type of manager that can get more out of this squad than you can, David, because for all the good stuff that you've done, we think you're limited to that extent.
Right. But so at the very worst then, from Moyes' position, if he gets us into Europe, he under your scenario, Paul, he would be expectant of a severance bonus.
Well, almost certainly he'll have a contractual bonus that says if you get European football, you get paid another £1 million or whatever the figure is.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then that is what happens.
Mm.
And then David's in a position where he can retire to becoming a football pundit for the rest of his life, or he can walk off and get a contract with another club and be in a much stronger negotiating position to do so.
Yeah.
So he's not really a loser in this, is he?
No, exactly.
But he comes on like a man who's in handcuffs.
Yeah.
I kind of understand him. I've had much more sympathy for him over as this transfer window closes than I have previously, because he can't, you know, he's not being given the tools to do the job. And when underneath his feet they go, oh, we'll sell the best player you've got because that will square the books. You would, wouldn't you, in his position, throw your hands up and go, well, how the fuck am I supposed to do the job?
Yeah.
You're going to do that. It's ludicrous. And he kind of said so. And fair play. But, you know, it just sounds like another muck and make do season, doesn't it?
Yeah. But this is the problem that we've got as fans. No, we're not seeing anybody either take a strategic view of the club, although the Friedkins would argue that they are. But we're definitely not seeing anybody who's looking to go out and win silverware, which is what we as the fans
want
from our football club.
Yeah. Well, minimum requirement is qualification for Europe, and ideally pick up a trophy.
Yeah, I mean, I think as a football fan, what does qualification for Europe mean? It means for a few thousand fans who have got the means and enjoy going to European away games, that they have a fantastic few days in Prague or Lisbon or some other fine right. European city. Mm-hmm. And it means that we get more exposure, and it means that you watch more games on a Thursday night than you would do otherwise. I would swap one piece of silverware for 5 years of European football as a fan, because I could live with the experience of Everton running around Wembley with the FA Cup.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
A cup for 5 years of Europe.
You might not want to quote me exactly on that, but the sentiment is there.
I get the sense, and I've said it on this podcast before. There are a whole generation and more of Evertonians who've never had the pleasure of crying at Wembley, seeing an Everton captain lifting the FA Cup.
I want to see
or the League Championship trophy or whatever. And need that.
Yeah, I want to see 150,000 Evertonians lining the streets of Liverpool to welcome the Everton team back with a trophy, or quarter of a million, whatever the figure is.
Yeah.
And I want to see grandparents hugging their grandkids, crying their eyes out.
Exactly, climbing the lampposts.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Standing on bus shelters on Queen's Drive. No, yeah,
I've
been there, done that.
Yeah, exactly, been there, done that. Couldn't agree more. Winning a trophy is huge. But come on, Moisey, lift us the League Cup.
I think you're very ahead of yourself. I'll settle for beating United.
Well, I'd prefer the FA Cup to the League Cup, but I'll take the League Cup.
Take any trophy at the minute. Ooh. Well, let's see. But let's get this transfer window finalised and out of the way. And if there's, if people are going, if Ndiaye is going to Spurs, good luck. Hope you fail. If Beto's going to, where do you say, Fiorentina? Thanks, Nobby. Thanks for your efforts. Enjoy Italy. Nice ice cream. And if anybody else is coming, Richie, welcome home. Do what you did before.
Just on Beto for a second.
Yeah.
Let's assume that Beto, today is Beto's last day as an Everton player. I think it's worthy of saying that he's a limited footballer, but he did his absolute best.
And I think
he should go with every Evertonian's gratitude for that.
I'm sure he will. Yeah, don't doubt that for a second.
Totally agree. He might not be the world's greatest centre forward, but I think he's done his damnedest when he's got on the field. It's not always been pretty, and at times it's been downright ugly, but he has scored some goals and he has given us some moments to cheer. And I think he's bought into the club. I saw a little video on YouTube the other day. He was in a shop and there was some kids in the shop, and they must have been Liverpool fans because they were giving him some grief, and he was stood there laughing his head off and thoroughly enjoying the banter with these kids in the shop. And I thought, that's what you want from a footballer. Not to take life quite as seriously as we do at times. Just his interaction with these kids in the shop was actually really nice to see. And I think he has got the club. I wish him all the best if he goes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's a couple of videos, isn't there, from last year when he has different members of his family around, and he just comes across as a very humble guy who is absolutely delighted to have had the opportunity to play, first of all, professional football, but then secondly to play in the Premier League and to play for a team a team like Everton. So he's a guy who's probably met his own personal objectives many times over.
Yeah, that's probably a fair comment. Maybe even exceeding them to some degree.
Yeah.
I think, you know, he's one of those players, isn't he? That if he does move on in the next 24, 48 hours, he's one of those players that fans will look at his new team's results to see how he's doing. And there's been plenty of players who've left Everton Football Club and moved on that you wouldn't give a rat's ass about.
I saw that DCL scored for Leeds yesterday.
Yes, he did. Yeah. He scored at least one goal in 11 consecutive seasons in the Premier League, DCL. But, you know, he's another one. He gave us good service. All right, he's moved on. I'm sure, you know, fans did. Yeah. Well, we've just said it. You know, he's doing okay at Leeds. Good luck to the lad. You know, there's been players who, when they've left, you without being horrible, you've not wanted them to succeed because of either the way they've gone, things they've done, things they've said. You know, but I think Beto is one of those that will go with best wishes from everybody.
Here. What's your feelings about whether Grealish is on his way back here or?
I don't know. You know, with the scenario that Paul's outlined with the Friedkins, I've got to be. I'm not sure it'll happen.
What, Grealish?
Yeah. I'm just not sure it'll happen, you know, for the financial reasons. I mean, he's going to want, you know, I mean, if it's another loan and City are going to pick up some of his wages, then yeah, I think it'll happen. But if it's an outright transfer, I'm not so sure it will happen. I don't know. I mean,
no,
he would certainly add another dimension to the squad, for sure.
Well, he's the best replacement for Ndiaye, if you like, because his first touch is as good.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing that a really classy first touch does guarantees you keep the ball and there's continuity. And that's important as you play your way out of situations.
Mm.
You know, I sometimes wonder if the reason we lump the ball a lot is because actually the players don't trust each other enough. But we'll see.
All right, should we leave it there?
Yeah. I think I would just like to say, this, you know, having waited till Monday morning to record this, this has been a considerably more pleasurable talking the Blues than I imagined it to be at 11 o'clock on Saturday morning. When my fuse was well and truly lit. It wasn't fizzing, it was lit. Holy
smoke. Can I just say one more thing about the Armstrong thing?
By all means.
I hope somebody in the club, and I hope it's David Moyes, notwithstanding what I've said previously about David not necessarily being that close to all of the players, puts his arm around the kid and says, you know, the decision to sell you was only about business. It wasn't about how we thought about you as a player, how we thought about you as a person. We believe in you as much as we did before this news broke, and we want you to go on and have a fantastic career at Everton. Because that kid must be thinking, what the hell's going on?
That kid did a fantastic performance on Saturday. Yeah, considering what was going on, you've got to go, wow. I mean, he is the real thing. That's an international player in the making. And curiously, since that's who we were playing, the boy that the Bournemouth manager foolishly took off for his exit round and lost the and you know lost the 3 points. Scott, what a player he is!
Yeah, he looked good, didn't he?
Oh, fabulous football player, and yeah. You know Armstrong is in that class, and we'll have that career. It's just got to have it with Everton. We can't go on. You know, the list we all know, that heartbreaking of people that we've gone, ooh, look at them, and then they're gone because we can't afford to keep them and we have a selling mentality. You know, remember years and years ago when Rodwell was suddenly touted for the England captain,
yeah.
And that bloke who was CEO then went, great, sell him. And you go, no, you have to build around these people.
Yeah, but we've always been run on the basis that we've ended up having to sell our assets to meet the inefficiencies of the business, haven't we?
30 years of it, yeah. Because we used to be the exact opposite, Paul. Yeah, you had a good game exactly. against us, we'd buy you.
Back in the day.
Yeah, and it's a bit more than, sadly, it's a bit more than 30 years ago since that happened.
I'm afraid it is.
Yeah.
I'm afraid it is. And, you know, there'll be young people going, what the fuck? What the... What are these codgers banging on about? Oh, God, just beat United, for goodness sake.
Well, yeah, and I'll actually be able to report having been at the game live, so...
Are you going to
the match on Saturday?
I am, yeah.
Brilliant.
Good.
Yeah, so looking forward to that.
Good news.
Right. Okay, let's leave it there and get this out. And I'm just going to say it's Easter Monday. It's not. It's a bank holiday Monday. And people can listen to it this afternoon.
Yeah.
Whoopee.
Or any time of the day, depending upon where in the world you are.
Silly.
We finish as we began.
Listen, guys, thanks very much. Appreciate your time and your comments as always. And you've got an exciting week ahead of you, anticipating the United game.
Yeah. Ooh.
All right. Thanks very much.
Cheers,
all right,
Paul.
Guys. Take care. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Bye, everybody.
Bye now.